could it really be?
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Happy to be joined by my co-host whenever he can step in. He does have a day job, D.R. Tucker, my favorite climate convert. For those of you who are tuning in for one of the first times, well, my good friend D.R. was a climate skeptic, and then he read the science, and a couple years ago had a big wake-up call. His eco-epiphany was to realize that his fellow Republicans had duped him, and that climate change not only was real and happening, but actually very urgent, and he's become quite the activist. And every night he just kind of goes across the Internet and trolls, I want to say, but that's not a very positive word. He scans the Internet, and every morning in my inbox, because he's on the East Coast, I'm on the West, there's fabulous articles and audio clips and video clips of all coverage of the climate. And he found a great article by J.J. Goldberg, who's joining us now from the Forward. J.J., thanks for being with us, and wanted to talk about your essay. And D.R., since you found it, why don't you start?
Yes, J.J. Goldberg, it's so great to talk to you. Pleasure to be here. Sure. Why do you think Obama has not emphasized climate change as much as he should have over the past few years? Obviously, he mentioned it heavily or significantly in his 2013 inaugural address, but he does seem to have toned down the green rhetoric over the course of the past 4 years. What do you think is motivating that?
I honestly don't know. I think it seems to me that he's just not tuned in. He relies to a certain degree on advisors. They've got their agenda. It's a fairly standard liberal agenda. I admire what they do want to do. But somehow they just have what the expression is, the penny hasn't dropped.
Do you think it will now that it was mentioned high up in the inaugural address? Did that give you hope?
To be honest, I didn't see the climate reference in his inaugural address as being as prominent as others did. I noticed that he mentioned it, but it seemed to me that his speech was a fairly coherent, cohesive argument for a vision of government, and the climate thing was just sort of shoved in there.
Really?
He talked a lot about interdependency and relying on each other and being there for each other. And by the way, the climate boom boom. It didn't fit into the larger picture, and since then it's disappeared. I noticed that after Hurricane Sandy, there was a huge national response. 6 weeks later, we had Sandy Hook, the shooting in Connecticut. Obama got very engaged in that. The difference in response strikes me as being almost psychological. One is you see kids on the screen, you picture your own kids, and the other is very theoretical. And he's just he hasn't got science people around him who are talking to him in a language he can understand.
J.K., I'm not sure if you're familiar with the author and climate blogger Joe Rome of climateprogress.org and the Center for American Progress. He has often written that you mentioned Obama's advisors, that specifically Obama advisor David Axelrod is the one responsible for the climate silence during the course of the Obama administration, arguing that Axelrod is of the belief that people don't vote based on climate change and it's not a really important issue. What do you make of that argument from Rome? Do you think it's a legitimate one?
It sounds sensible. To the extent that they're focused on re-election as their sole lodestar, it makes sense that this wouldn't be up there. The public isn't aroused because the leadership isn't arousing them, and the leadership isn't arousing them because the public isn't pressuring them. It's a kind of a broken loop, and I don't think anybody's figured out how to break into it. It seems to me that if the Center for American Progress, the leadership there, if Media Matters and Daily Cut, if the liberal talk network could mobilize and get focused and see this as kind of separate from and above all of the other issues.
Mm.
I think people, they might get it. I noticed, just as a last point here, in the first Obama administration, there was a major, major push for health care. Now, the economy and jobs really needed to be fixed, but they were focused on health care. It's commendable. Something needed to be done. But the economy didn't get fixed, and they almost didn't get reelected because of it. Thank God for the Republicans being the unelectables that they are. In this second one, there's this focus on guns, which again is a commendable issue, but it doesn't begin to compare to the magnitude of what we face in the climate. So they get fixated on a particular thing, they go after it, and the rest doesn't seem to break through.
I couldn't agree more, JJ, and what we, you know, want to see and should hopefully see the beginning of, at least this year, is for that fixation to focus on climate change, because you're right, it's pardon the expression, that gangbang mainstream media mentality that chased me away from covering news for CBS Radio after two decades, because they're always over the same stories. And yet, if we could really take that same hyper-focus across the board, you know, wide and deep, at least for, you know, a period of time, that would, I think, build the muscle behind the movement that we've needed to see to get any kind of climate change legislation passed, any kind of carbon tax seriously discussed.
You know, it's funny, I've noticed over the last few weeks, in dinner table discussions and conversations with friends here on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, everybody's talking about guns. If the once the president and the Washington blogosphere start talking about an issue, people take it up. They'll support the president. It becomes the issue. It was health care 2 years ago because the president was talking about it. Now, I just did some math for my column this week, and I figured out there's 30,000 people per year dying from gunfire in this country. There's 250,000 guns. I'm sorry, 250 million guns already in circulation. So if there were the best legislation possible, which we won't have, to limit the sales of new guns, we could probably save 1,000 lives a year, maybe 1,500 out of the 30,000. There are 250,000, 290,000, according to Columbia University School of Public Health, dying per year as a direct result of poverty. Almost 300,000. That's 10 times as many as from guns. And they're not doing a jobs program. They're not going after a progressive tax, return to a real progressive tax structure, which would take the same sort of political focus that the guns thing is going to take. And then you get the climate thing, which is our whole future. Now, if you can get one major initiative through per term because of the way Washington works these days, it was health care. Now we've got 2 years. My prediction is the gun thing is going to be their one accomplishment. It will probably lose us the Senate in 2014 because you've got so many Democratic senators running for reelection in red states. And where will we be left? They just don't get it.
Don't forget about immigration. That's going to take up some space, too.
Immigration. Plus, they've got to get past the debt limit and so on. They've got to work out a deal. It would be nice if they worked out a deal on the debt and the budget that were progressive rather than simply a compromise. They're going to use up all of the chips that they've got to push through a gun thing. They'll compromise on the budget, which accounts for a lot more lives, and this is going to be left out. You know, if Henry Waxman and Ron Wyden and a handful of Democrats who really get this issue went on the warpath right now and said, wait a minute, we're running in the wrong direction. We're using up the chips we have on a case, on an issue it's not urgent. It's not the end of the world. This is the end of the world.
Could not agree more. Hear, hear.
Gigi, speaking of Democrats who do get the issue, what did you make of John Kerry's appointment as Secretary of State? And do you think, as Joe Roman and others have argued, that this suggests that President Obama may in fact have the intestinal fortitude to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline?
I'm sorry, to say no to the what?
To the Keystone XL pipeline.
Oh, well, it's hopefully sure. I think actually Kerry is one of the people who sort of gets it.
He does. Did you see his speech on the Senate floor a few months back?
Yeah, I did. To see him focus on it. I'd like to see him put it high up on his agenda. You know, that's a good point. He is a voice who probably could break through to the president.
Mm-hmm. He has a lot of respect.
If the president were stumping the country on the climate the way he's stumping right now on guns, people would begin to wake up.
Completely agree. And given the year we just saw, 2012, with the, you know, historic heat waves and drought and flooding and tornadoes and fires and Hurricane Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, you think that that would be the equivalent of a Newtown shooting. But, you know, and not to in any way diminish the horror and tragic scope of that event, but like you say, that was 20 children killed, and how many children born, you know, living now and future children are going to be impacted by climate change. So the sad thing, I guess, is that it's kind of been knocked off the headlines. And would we need another year of that kind of weather? You know, do we have to wait till another disastrous event takes place to really move it, you know, front and center? Perhaps.
Well, we also need scientists to stop using words like maybe. They know what's going on. But because of their training, they couch it, and it becomes possible for people to dismiss it. They say, well, it's maybe, it's possible. Dick Cheney, articulated a theory that became a book by Ron Suskin, The 1% Doctrine. If there's a 1% chance of disaster, act as though it's a certainty, because 1% is too much. And now we're talking about 99%, and people are saying, well, prove it first. It's nuts.
It is. And especially when you consider that scientists are saying we have 2 to 4 years to turn this around, and they've been saying that for at least a year.
Right.
What if, heaven forbid, you know, Romney had gotten into the White House, and I'm sure you noted during the Republican convention how he made that snarky comment about Obama daring to care about the rising of the seas and healing of the planet. Heaven forbid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we have such a tough challenge.
We have an administration now where it's possible. But it's going to take a lot of pushing. That's all. That's the bottom line. It's not an administration that's closed to the topic, but it's an administration that needs to be woken up to the topic.
And hopefully your column is one of the voices that are, you know, getting to him and his administration in, you know, saying we need to deal with this right now. So thank you for your contribution. I know you have to go, but just want to give you a chance to give your publication little publicity.
It is the Forward, www.forward.com. It is a, we're 110 years old, originally a Yiddish daily newspaper, originally a voice of American social democracy. We're now a weekly, we're now in English as well as Yiddish, and we are, I think, the voice of the progressive Jewish community across the country.
Well,
and progressives in general.
As your Jewish host, I'm very happy to learn about it, and sorry I didn't know about it before, but I'm going to subscribe, and Mazel Tov again on the great column.
Thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Thanks. J.J. Goldberg with Forward, and DR is going to stay on with me. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk about a couple of other events that happened this past week on the Green Front. We'll be right back. It'll get hotter. It'll get worse. DR, what the frack is up with her?
Yeah, yes. We're talking about Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, who is putting forward a new energy plan that seems to be heavy on fracking and light on any sort of serious effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. She was recently on Andrea Mitchell Reports on MSNBC and made a statement suggesting that fracking might help us avoid the risk of future superstorms and future extreme weather events. And to her credit, Andrea Mitchell, mentioned the methane issue, but they sort of started going into another direction and started talking about Chuck Hagel. And the sad thing about that segment is that Lisa Murkowski, if you look at her previous statements, Lisa Murkowski understands the science very well. She's not a stupid woman, but she also understands who runs the show in what Ed Markey once called the gas and oil party. So she's sort of playing dumb, and it's a very embarrassing thing to watch that segment. And I think the energy policy she's forwarded is a policy she's forwarded that might take us backwards, so to speak.
Yeah, and she's not alone in Republicans playing dumb. I mean, just look at John McCain, who once believed that climate change was serious enough for him to sit down on a couch for an ad with Nancy Pelosi, you know, and then forgot that he knew that. She's completely shutting down any possibility of a carbon tax, I mean, as far as her support for it as well, showing that she doesn't get what's really the only hope for turning this around.
It's very odd, and also this is on the heels of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie having a press conference the other day where he basically said that, you know, he's not really focused on the causes of things like Superstorm Sandy. He's more focused on the cleanup. And again, Chris Christie, if you've looked at previous statements and when he discusses the issue, he understands full well what the issue is, but he's got to play along with the various oil company barons that run the show in his party, so he's going to play dumb. And the odd thing about this is that, while you have these Republicans basically pretending to be stupid, you also have a very unusual occurrence in my home state of Massachusetts, where you have a guy running for the Senate seat John Kerry vacated by the name of Dan Winslow, who's a state representative. And when he announced that he would be forming an exploratory committee to run for Senate, he mentioned that we need to focus on both economic sustainability and climate sustainability. And I thought to myself, when is the last time you've ever heard of a Republican running for anything actually saying that? It seems to be a while. Very interesting.
And Murkowski, in her role as the ranking Republican on the Senate Energy Committee, really does have a say. And back in 2007, she co-sponsored a carbon cap and trade bill. So she was seen, apparently, as the Republican senator most likely to someday go for a carbon tax. Well, if not today, then when? What do we have to see before her ilk, you know, say we got a problem here?
It's what you call political amnesia, or I guess it's a form of what Obama was called Romnesia. All these guys who, in the late 2000s, said, yeah, we understand this issue. We need to take action. And then all of a sudden, it's 2012, 2013, and it's like, what? Climate what? Huh? Amazing.
Well, and what else did you catch in your wide net this week, DR, that was of interest on the climate and green front?
Well, I'm also quite amused by the continued media coverage of Al Gore's new book, The Future, and how a lot of his media inquisitors keep bringing up the issue of his sale of Current TV to Al Jazeera. And my guess is that there's a certain concern among these news outlets that Al Jazeera America might outflank them on climate change coverage. And it's very interesting that this comes up while news breaks of a shakeup involving CNN and the fact that I guess CNN is bringing in Jeff Zucker, who was the father of the Green is Universal effort at MSNBC, and it raises questions as to whether CNN will be, you know, jostled by the competition from Al Jazeera America, that they might step up their coverage on things such as climate change. Perhaps there will be a domino effect where Al Jazeera America motivates both CNN and MSNBC to sort of step their game up on green coverage. Wouldn't that be
how ironic? Oh, you can't make this stuff up, right? I mean, you've watched all these Al Gore interviews like I have this past week, and hearing, you know, him take a lot of heat for selling it to the oil-funded Al Jazeera. And he is pretty adept at deflecting, or trying to, but when he goes on to say, to compliment Al Jazeera on their great climate coverage better than American outlets, I have to cough or choke on my wine or something.
Yes, it is something, but again, you know, competition is a great motivating factor, and if these news outlets see that Al Jazeera America is eating their lunch on things like environmental coverage, perhaps they will expand their coverage of this issue instead of sort of giving it the sort of a second tier coverage that often that it so often seems to get.
Absolutely. And, of course, the first segment we had with Tyson Miller, you couldn't join us for them showing that, you know, at least up until middle of last year, research shows that it was still a pathetic 1% of all coverage, you know, news media was environmental. Hopefully that went up a little bit given the record, you know, events we saw between July and December. Don't need to recount them. And still, though, it felt like it was mentioned and the dots were connected, but it's kind of passed as, you know, again, gun issues take front and center, immigration. But hopefully Obama's next term, we'll see, you know, this term now, a real commitment that we know has the, you know, foundation. You know, he does believe it. It's there, but, you know, can't afford to get sidetracked on this issue.
Yes, and it will be very interesting to see what he says in the State of the Union address about this issue. Especially you mentioned the International Energy Agency saying they only have a couple of years left to sort of really, you know, turn things around. It's interesting that this month is the sixth anniversary of both the fourth Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change being released and also Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth winning the Oscar. And you remember the intense coverage of the issue during that time. Perhaps if Obama says the right things and the most prominent things in the State of the Union address, perhaps we will once again have a media focus on this most pertinent issue.
You're right. The State of the Union will be a real good indicator. And, of course, there was a attempt by our friends at the Global Warming Education Network. I think they spearheaded at least one of the efforts to get Obama to give a State of the Climate address, to devote a whole speech to the State of the Climate. And I still think that's a brilliant idea and have been promoting it everywhere I go because that would really elevate, you know, consciousness in this country, and that's what we need. Sounds like that's not going to happen, but let's hope that he at least devotes a good portion, you know, more than a sentence or two of his State of the Union address to the state of our climate, which, of course, is going to impact our union in a big way. Already is.
Yeah. Well, there is a hopeful sign, and unfortunately I didn't mention it with Mr. Goldberg. There was a report, I believe, from Reuters a few days ago indicating that President Obama plans to take his time in terms of reviewing the Keystone XL pipeline. And I think if he is going for a death by a thousand cuts approach, that would be a hopeful and smart strategy on his part. Basically, just sort of let it drag out until the Trans-Canada says, hey, you know what, we're not going to bother.
That's right. And until the facts get out there for more Americans, so they understand this is not the answer to, you know, jobs and certainly has a big environmental impact in a negative way. We're out of time. Thanks for joining me, DR. Really appreciate it. And thanks for joining us on the show. You can see the archives at prn.fm and also at thegreenfront.com. See you next week. And I have another great program for you. In the meantime, have a great green one.